I like to say price trumps quality. Okay, this is in a kind of a geographic data sense. Aggregating, maintaining, making this stuff available. In an incredibly short period of time, there's been an enormous compression in value chains and distribution channels and consumption of data. People who compete with each other are partnering with each other. Consumers are not only consuming, they're also producing. That doesn't necessarily mean there's value in the traditional sense, but it means it's at least kind of eyeballs or community. But how does that translate to something of enduring value? Well, in the short term, there are a hell of a lot of companies that have a difficult time competing with free. So the notion of free trumps, or price trumps quality, or quality trumps price, is that in the case of Google coming out, the Google turn-by-turn nav on Android with Motorola, by and large, I'm no kind of oracle here, but consumers like free, and consumers like good enough. And if they can save 10 bucks a month, goddamn it, I think they're going to gravitate to something like that. There's a tremendous opportunity in providing value-added content and services, but it very quickly forces people to add enormous value by adding not just data, because data is kind of given. I don't care if you get it from Localese or InfoUSA or anybody else, or you get it yourself. You're still going to have to add value on top of that, because that product will be commoditized over time, and it's happening in a very, very rapid way, as we've seen. Elephant in the room, I haven't really said much about this already, Google. So what I'd like to do first is have, let's see, who's going to give us 3 minutes? This is, who is this? Christian. So I have a little introduction, surprise. So Juha from CloudNet, unfortunately, couldn't make it, lives in London. So Christian Peterson is here. He is a vice president who drives the monetization strategy, which I'm very interested to hear about for a company that has how much in revenue? Prior to Cloud, maybe founded Advertainers, building rich media, rich internet apps, product planning for mobile macromedia, doing this with Flashlight in Japan, and also VP product management for a MVNO, which is really interesting. I just think the timing for that maybe wasn't the best. And studied business at Henley Management College. And please, a few moments, and have a seat back down, and we'll keep it moving along.
Okay.
This is when I want to interrupt you.
So I don't want to spend any time really talking about CloudMate. You know, you should definitely go look up our website and check it out. It's pretty exciting. What I want to talk about is really addresses this thing with the elephant in the room and free versus quality, et cetera. What we've seen especially introduced by Apple's App Store is that there's an interest from consumers, not just in getting apps on their phones, but getting more and more vertical apps. There's a reason that Apple's slogan is that there's an app for that. And the reason is that consumers are increasingly buying more apps at a lower price. That doesn't mean they're spending less money. It actually means they're spending the money distributed on more apps. And that also means that if we're talking horizontal service versus vertical services, we believe that there's a huge difference. You know, if you look at these two examples, you can use a generic map, the same map as everybody else, versus a map that you can customize to a specific app. You can do the same thing with the cartography. So in other words, how the map looks, whether it fits your brand, whether it's a map that fits the actual use case the user is using. You can have the map and no special data on top, or you can actually put a lot of special data that your user needs for this particular use case on top of the map. Finally, you can actually decide which ads you want to use to monetize this application. Or you can sign up with somebody that just throws ads on your app. That's really the two use cases we're talking about here. So if you look at what Google's navigation app is, in our view, it's like Google Search. It's a generic application that does navigation. We think there's a huge opportunity in creating vertical applications, both navigation and other LBS areas.
Thank you. Next, we have Duncan McCall. Duncan is not a spelunker. Duncan is a caver. Spelunking is a pejorative term, as I found out last night. Some drinks with Duncan. Duncan founded Public Earth, which I think he's going to talk a little bit about, so I won't say a word there. Founded the company in 2008, backed by Polaris. Founded a few startups, one in the dot-com days, an integrator, IS Solutions, and was part of a team that built, I want to know about this another time, the nationwide retailer Organic to Go, another time, yeah. Done something with RFID and different kinds of positioning technologies. Spent 3 years in Asia, Mobil Oil, Lotus Consulting. It's from the UK. I don't know where you went to university. Did you?
I did. We won't talk about that.
Yeah, right. Fair enough. But anyway, you studied in university. Something. Anyway, up to you.
Thanks, Ian. Well, thanks for staying. I'm pretty impressed with the turnout for their graveyard shift. So. I'm sure Ian's promised to shake things up a bit, so we'll see if we can oblige. So I founded a company called Public Earth, and I won't give you the full pitch, but I'd like to talk a little bit about it because we're pretty new. We launched a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, I encourage you to go and check it out. So we call ourselves a wiki of places. And for this audience, that may be saying, hey, we're crowdsourced POIs, really into POIs. So that's our focus. And when I talk about that, there's a couple of things we do that are differentiated. So we have restaurants and bars and hotels, but that's not really our focus. I really think there's a tremendous opportunity to take all those other POIs out there that are in people's minds, that are locked in analog data sources, that haven't been expressed, and get people to describe those in really meaningful detail. So we have a really deep ontology of places. And like I say, our real focus is on recreation activities, hobbies. So skiing, biking, fishing, not spelunking, but caving, things like that. The knowledge exists out there, but it's not in an organized format. And for each one of those categories, if you create a place in Public Earth, or you go and edit a place, but it's a wiki platform, every single category has unique semantic attributes. So what does that mean? It means if you add a fishing spot, you don't just drop it on the map and say, hey, great fishing spot. You say, well, these are the types of fish. These are the seasons to fish there. If it's a park, is it dog friendly? Does it have a barbecue? Does it have kids activities? So then we can query that semantic database and say, don't just show me parks, but show me dog-friendly parks or parks with roundabouts, etc. And a couple of other things we do is I really believe in the GPS world in terms of having tight integration to all of these boring old PNDs that are out there and allowing people to be able to download points. So we've written a connector to PND devices. Download and upload points, we're relaunching that in a couple of weeks. We're building an iPhone app we're launching in a few weeks as well. And the really big vision that we've got is we want to create this data source of points of interest that push out into this ecosystem so other applications, other devices can use them, and we become a really meaningful, intelligent data source about interesting places that you can get on the go, get on the web, and it's a big wiki that's community-driven. So that's my few-minute pitch. I appreciate not coughing or kicking me in the shins.
Thank you. Much obliged. Next, we'll introduce you to Jaron Koenig, who's been at Ted Atlas for four years?
Something like that.
I thought he lived in San Francisco because I see him everywhere, and I just envision he lives here, but he actually lives in Charlotte, the new Wall Street, or it was the new Wall Street until we got the meltdown. Within Ted Atlas, which, as we know, was acquired by TomTom 18 months ago? Okay. He manages strategy and marketing across mobile, internet, and telecom channels to really get a grip and understand and position Tele Atlas within the LBS market. Prior to Tele Atlas, worked at Sprint, Nextel, Cable and Wireless, MCI, and founded a company, which I don't know anything about, Push Loop in 2000, which is not sexy, which means I think it was more likely to be successful. So I took it from one of your bios somewhere. Push Loop solves unaddressed connectivity and integration needs in supply chain systems. Studied engineering, University of Virginia. I give to you, Darren. Go ahead.
All right, well, thank you very much for that, Ian. If anybody was hoping to go next door and get some coffee, it looks like Ian might have drunk it all beforehand.
I got you.
And sadly, there is no coffee.
Oh.
Just to ruin that for you.
So, again, my name is Darren Koenig. I manage marketing and strategy for Tele Atlas here in North America. For those who don't know what Tele Atlas does, we are one of the world's two largest providers of digital mapping. So we currently have navigable street and road networks in, I think the number is 93, but it changes so regularly, usually up. And about 93 countries and territories around the world. We are in just about every industry that you can imagine or use a digital map in. Everything from from phone-based applications like Telenav to web-based maps to insurance companies trying to figure out floodplains to 911 dispatch systems. So we're tremendously diversified in terms of the types of customers that we work with. And obviously, participating in today's conversation is, you know, phenomenally interesting to us because of so many changes that are taking place, specifically in the connected markets and in wireless and automotive specifically. And I think a couple of the exciting topics to talk about are really the balance that Ian mentioned earlier between quality and price. And I think that's clearly one that has tremendous differences in different types of usages. If you dispatch an ambulance, where's good enough? It's a totally different place than if I'm doing a search for the local coffee shop. And then there's also the discussion that I think has been mentioned a couple of times about control. The idea, and Christy mentioned specifically with OpenStreetMap, the idea that as innovative new technologies are being developed, how much of that intellectual property is held with the developer of the technology and the application developer, and how much goes to the different technology provider sources. So I think a great set of topics for us to discuss today. So thanks very much for having us.
Thank you, Darren. Okay, so first kind of question, a little observation leading to a question, I think, from Darren, for Darren and Christian. This one not so much directed around Duncan stuff, although I'm sure he has a few choice words to say. Price versus quality. There has historically in the U.S. within base map data, there's been always a free alternative. There's a Google Map API, but I like to say, what's the price of free? It's not purely free in every sense you might think. It's certainly a kind of a commercial sense in terms of dollars flowing from one party to another. It may not be any. Maybe there's ad revenue out of it eventually for you, not likely. But there's no cost. If you want to roll your own, you can use Tiger data, right, which is census-derived. It's updated a few times a decade. It's okay for some things. It's crappy for other things. Clayton Christensen, Harvard Business School heavyweight type, he wrote this book called The Innovator's Dilemma, which is useless. The good one was The Innovator's Solution, which was actually a bit prescriptive. One thing he talked about was industries that have kind of been riding on a cash cow for a while, and they see a new entrant nipping at their heels, and they tend to ignore it, thinking it'll go away. You can think about the rise of JetBlue, Southwest, all these kind of startup airlines. Next thing you know, JetBlue has taken away all the kind of the short-haul profitable routes from United and the rest, and United just kind of makes, well, I didn't want them anyway. Then one day you kind of look down and you kind of get this oh shit feeling because they're really somebody to contend with now. So recognizing now that there are clearly viable alternatives in the marketplace, one can choose to pay a premium in roll your own map, which is enormous amounts of work in terms of compiling it, developing. If you're going to make an API, you've got to understand the documentation, their updates, etc. You could use something like a Google Map API, Yahoo, Microsoft, MapQuest, CloudMade. Or a developer can just go for free, right? Meaning go to Tiger or something else. So for a while, these people that didn't need the really premium data would be forced to use something like a Telehouse or other commercial-grade base map. Do you feel that by possibly co-opting this kind of lower tier of segment, you might be able to hold on to them, or would you want to hold on to them, relative to kind of a partnership along the lines of Telehouse and CloudMade or Telehouse and OpenStreetMap as a way to maintain that tier of the market that doesn't want to pay a lot, certainly paying a lot more than they would right now? So do you ignore that segment, or is it something you'd like to try to get into, and how do you recognize what the value is? Because clearly, they'll go somewhere else if they can pay a lot less and still get a paucity of attributes, or coverage might be different, or update cycle might not be as similar.
So, I don't think there's any... We're in such an explosion of innovation right now in terms of so many new applications, so location being enhanced, being embraced everywhere. You know, it's now in Twitter, it's now in Facebook, it's now in everything that used to be completely static somehow has tied location into it. And then there are still the really cool new location-specific applications that are being developed where location is core. But clearly it's a context, I think, that's being spread across everywhere. So there's nothing, I don't think there's any particular market that Telehouse would ignore. In fact, but there are some where it's more efficient, more effective.
So does this mean you drop your pricing for certain markets who are willing to go for free?
I think that, you know, I think everybody would love everybody in the supply chain to be free except themselves. So if I, you know, we partner with everybody in order to reach a developer. So we partner with handset manufacturers, we partner with operating systems, we partner with web portals. You know, we provide the maps for Google in 33 countries, no longer the US, but 33 other countries. And we have our own developer program, and we partner with, the TCSs and the Descartes and the other platform, and ESRIs and all the other platforms of the world. And so I guess for us, it's for TeleAtlas specifically, this type of innovation is great because, first of all, there's an app for that, there's a platform for that. There are great platforms that meet different kinds of developers' needs, and more of them every day, and more functionality coming out on every day. And so that's good for us. And then candidly, even though some of the consumer prices are lower, the number of consumer users around the world is going up exponentially. And so the more people who are used to using maps and get familiar with using them, and the faster that location-based advertising and other pieces of the ecosystem grow, really the better it is for everybody in this room, because it may be that we start out with a reasonably, it may be that there are rocky patches for some people and some pieces of the value chain for the next period of time. But after we get through that, as the market again comes to a second cycle of maturity, and that's the consumer side of maturity, not the enterprise side of maturity, we're all positioned to deliver something to that much larger base.
We're getting warmed up, so I'll kind of let that slide right now, but I'm going to come back to that in a little bit. Do you have a comment or response?
Well, I mean, the way I look at it is that, Google has not really started this disruption, right? The disruption happened when you had the App Store with a big focus on free apps and paid apps. So in my view, it's just a natural thing. There'll be free apps and there'll be paid apps. We support both. If developers aren't making any money, we actually don't charge them. But when they are making money, we do charge them. Those things, need to follow each other. We'd be naive of us to expect to make money from developers that aren't making any money. That'd be a very short relationship. Of course, there are developers that have been hurt by Google releasing a free navigation app. If that's their livelihood, they're pretty good businesses around, that's all they do, they're going to be hit by this. I think it's more a question of, can Google play both forces? Can they be trusted by developers and then at the same time cannibalize the developing markets? I think the answer to that is no.
Yeah, I think it's clear in many cases for those of us who might have kind of had kind of loftier ideas on Google being kind of an enlightened being looking to cultivate an ecosystem, it's clear in telco and many other markets as well that that's not the case, and things are starting to surface now. And some people are aware of it in particular channels that are kind of deep into this. Certainly consumers love the software. I think they make fabulous software. So it kind of creates a challenge where it's strictly a business argument, but it's surrounded by consumers who are in love with this stuff. But I'm going to come back to the revenue question. That's not going away yet. Okay.
Yeah, so I think, so a little bit from our perspective, where we're focused on is POIs, and I think the question that you often say, I think certainly relevant is, this balance of free and good enough. So I think, you've got a one end of the spectrum, the likes of, the Info USAs in this world, and the W Cities who have, quality data, this DPU that's in this, what we call, category of head content, restaurants, bars, and I think there's a market for that, there's a paid market, but already that's being disrupted in a major way. And you go way down to where we are and we say, look, well, we'll give you, the ski resorts, the fishing spots, the interesting stuff. You don't really have a cohesive database that exists. And it may not be complete. It may not be 100% accurate. And there's this expectation that, well, if it's free or more or less free and it's good enough, I think in our market, that really plays to our advantage. I'm okay with that.
Quick lightning round question for the three of you. Will Google's local business center eventually supplant any third-party relationships they have for business listings? Will that happen in 1 year, 2 years, or never?
Never.
2 years.
Okay, I say it's going to happen in 1 year. Sure, the Google map isn't great, but it works damn well enough for people who are free. People can bitch about it all they want, but they're still using it. Pardon me? This is the truth. Another question around this is the idea that this geographic content could or should be free, and the developer, the ecosystem, users, community kind of hold hands and crystals and things. That I think that really misses the point, because millions of users can get lots of value out of whatever's put in front of them if they perceive that. There's an underlying organization that has to provide that experience to users, and that's where real costs are born. Geographic data needs to be maintained or degrades over time. This is distinct from many other types of base map data. Many other types of data sets don't change as often, aren't as critical in a broad kind of horizontal manner. So the maintenance costs must be borne by somebody. If they're not borne by somebody, you obviously have reduced costs, reduced value, and the level of satisfaction might be tarnished, but nonetheless, it's there, and it's something that they want to use. So the idea of charging people for something which is not great is kind of hard, right? This is kind of the trade-off. With something like CloudMade, you're running, so everybody knows, CloudMade is effectively kind of commercializing the OpenStreetMap data by adding lots of value-added tools and services atop, kind of okay. So OpenStreetMap data is wonderful for a lot of things, and kudos to Steve Coast, if he's here, for championing this thing many, many years ago. The number of users and edits in the last 18 months alone is something close to exponential. But nonetheless, there are a lot of things it can't do. There are quite a few things it probably can't do and will ever do. So routing, I think, is one. How can you add value-added services to something that you then must put back into the common pool? Meaning if CloudMade, through its tools and services, are able to collect interesting data elements, you must, by the terms of the license, put it back to OpenStreetMap. So that value goes quickly back into the general community, which is great for the community, but it sucks for CloudMade.
Well, it doesn't at all, actually. The way we look at that is there's OpenStreetMap is a fantastic data set, and it's not, by the way, about just getting up to the same level as Telemetry data sets. As you can see in Germany already, it exceeds that. And the mappers, once it's their hobby, continue to map. And they'll continue until the map looks like the real world.
But in no time soon is it going to be used on par with what can use a commercial grade map for.
And Google has just made that a difficult market, so we certainly don't see that as the only market. We see all the different vertical apps as the market.
So what would it be of being a base? Would be a map API, and they just build their stuff on top, and then it's advertising, or?
So, like I said before, the way we make money is when the developers make money. So what we do...
So right now, how many developers are making money? Right, a lot of companies aren't making money.
There will always be, once you have vertical apps, it's a long-tail model, right? There will always be more developers not making money than there are developers making money. That's not a problem, because the developers that have success and have lots of users are the ones making money, and that's also the ones costing us money, and that's where we charge.
But over cost of sales in the long tail is quite significant, right? How do you acquire these customers or these audiences? That's quite significant. That's also the case with Public Earth and going after the long tail of content. Who here is familiar with Placial? Right? Diana, isn't it? Okay. Question. Pause it. Placial 2005?
We were sorry.
Yeah. Placial 2005, Public Earth 2009. Compare and contrast.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a totally relevant question. I think the ecosystem has moved on a bit. I think that technology adoption of location, the reason we're at conferences like this, really speaks to the fact that mainstream consumers now understand the value of really intelligent descriptive place information. So the concept, we feel that we're doing some things quite different from Placial in terms of the real focus on structured intelligent information, one point of interest, one structured description. We aspire to be a Wikipedia-esque of place information, not map information, not social information, descriptive place information that's pushed out to devices and the ecosystem.
And is the business model akin to CloudMade in terms of advertising-supported models? Or?
Well, no, being a venture-funded internet company, we don't have a business model. But I had to get out of this. So,
There's no investors.
This is off the record.
So, you know, the reality is that there's three stages to our business, right? You've got to build a platform, you've got to scale that platform, acquire the community, build the content, and then you monetize and scale the business. So we're looking now to get the scale to be able to monetize. But right from the beginning, we had a number of monetization strategies, and I won't bore everybody with them, but I think they are relevant. But we have to gain critical mass first.
Okay, so potentially crap on your map strategy with others.
No, so, you know, we crap on the map is
this is an incredibly viable strategy, right? But what it means is you have to have enormously large audiences come to you. This is the problem. Otherwise, it's not worth.
So, you know, the thing that I really think is a differentiation is if we can empower the community to create intelligent content about places that doesn't exist in a structured format, that piece of content itself has inherent value that can be pushed out through the ecosystem and doesn't need to be monetized through, you know, the pure concept of, hey, bring an eyeball in and show them an advertisement. So that's our fundamental direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Comment from Darren? And then we'll ask a few questions. One more comment from...
Put your hands up and I'll come to you.
I guess my only comment would be that... Lest we sort of be thrown into the category of, you know, that there are community built maps and there are not community built maps. One of the things that Teleatlas has really spent, we first launched a portal about 3.5 years ago to collect community input. And it took a long time to figure out how to automate what people were actually telling us and figuring out.
So for map edits?
For edits to the map.
Okay.
For things where, you know, we had your house 100 yards down from where it was, or what used to be a two-way street had become a one-way street, or things like that. And we built a portal to do that, which we eventually opened APIs to our partners to pass us the information. But we felt like that was always an important piece for us. But we had the same issue that you guys have touched on a little bit here, which was scale. How do you get enough inputs to make it statistically valid? Because we still had a map that was used for all of these tremendously diverse purposes. And we couldn't just necessarily take one person's word for an edit being needed. We needed to validate it several ways. Either so many people told us, you know, 1,000 people told us that this used to be a one way and now it's a two way, fine. Or we went out and manually validated it and using one of the techniques that we used to put any other edit into the map. So we started doing that, recognizing that it was important, again, over 3 years ago. When the TomTom acquisition came through, a year and a half ago, we suddenly had the scale to let us do that on a massive, massive basis. So instead of having a community of people who were shooting us one-off things, we had TomTom, tens of millions of users, sending information back through TomTom to us, and also giving us...
Do you have to opt in to do that?
Have to opt in to do that.
And what, roughly, what's the uptake then?
Most conservative number I've heard was 85% of people who were opted in. And the number is usually now closer to 90. And it's a very clear, very simple opt-in. But not every. But that said, those are the people who choose to hook up their TomTom. So not everybody who has it docks it to their computer or has a wireless one. The people who do, the people who are offered to participate in the community do so. And that's, I don't think that's a, to me personally, that used to be a really surprising number. But then you hear about, you know, the success of OpenStreetMap and the number of users that you guys have got, and you see the number of people contributing to Wikipedia, and you see the number of people who opt in to participate and share their thought, their information in all kinds of other communities, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. There is an amazing consumer willingness to participate, and so it's not a force thing, but an opt-in thing. In exchange for sharing my information, I get other people's information.
So, right. So this is great. It kind of, the rising tide lifts all boats, right? So Google Map Maker does this, Google Maps does this, Waze is doing this quite nicely. They've certainly proven it in Israel. Israel's a small country, it's relatively dense. You know, we'll see what happens in other parts of it. They've done great things in the US.
Just as a reference point, because of that, having standardized, taken all the information in, done all of that, all the normalization, all the statistical modeling, you know, we had, in one European country, we added, I think it was 18,000 kilometers of road based on that input. We added over a million edits to the United States just this year because of those. So it has been phenomenally useful. And now that we're at, you know, true industrial scale, it is a way for us to cost effectively continue to build the best, highest quality map and, you know, continue to make the results.
I heard Google was getting, I honestly don't remember who this was from, although I wouldn't acknowledge if I didn't know, that Google is roughly, they're getting something like 10 or 15,000 edits a day, map. This is obviously something that slipped out from somebody. We didn't realize what they're saying. It's true. Kristen, you had a...
Just a comment here is that, you know, it's interesting that you said, you know, the data has to be statistically relevant. You know, for me, it's more a matter of a user takes our POI collector as a POI that's not already on the map. And from now on, whenever they use a navigation app or a local search app using the OpenStreetMap, it's there. Like this.
Because you're not charging them.
Not 6 months or 18 months later.
This is the kind of the price quality trade-off, right? Your users will contribute the data, and in return, it's good enough. It's not statistically valid. It doesn't need to be.
Well, it's not a matter of whether it's good enough. It's the fact that if there's a POI that I need in my map and it's not there, then I'll add it because I know that then I can stop using it. And so can my friends and family, etc. But if I add it and it takes 18 months to get there, or even 6 months to get there, then why would I add it?
Yeah, agreed. So Jab, and that's a good point. I know everybody's gotten a lot better doing that over time.
But there are two different things, right? One is your ability to access the information. The other one is you putting it in codifying it as part of your reference data set. So for us, you know, we've got a data set which only the most reliable information goes into. That said, you can stack on top of it at the application layer whatever else you want. So we've got tons of applications, whether, you know, it's the Cardus platform, or whether it's Telenav or NIM, or whether it's TomTom or whoever, who you take the map, you do all the stuff on our map, and then at the application layer, you layer your own specific points of interest on top. It might be as simple as the home button that you program into your PNAV device, or it might be a set of, you know, all the kids in your, you know, your kid, all the families in your kid's school. But lots of people layer on information that's instantly available.
Absolutely agree. But I
see one app at a time.
Sorry?
One app at a time.
One app at a time.
Yes, in other words, it stays in the app.
Right. Let's see if we have some questions here that can excite things further. This gentleman with a very fine sports coat.
No, we'll do it with the person who has the mic.
What? kind lady, can you please announce yourself?
Yes, Janice Partiga. I'm wondering if each of you can succinctly mention what your biggest business challenge is right now as a company.
It's very clear for us, developers. We're in this world for supporting developers, and that's our business.
But what if there are all the developers that don't have any business?
Well,
no
we
business.
Make sure that we address both the developers who are making good business and the ones who are up and coming.
Okay, so it's service everybody.
It's definitely a long-term model.
Yeah, so I'd say, I like the recurring theme of your questions, by the way, but I'd say that it's very simple for us. It is engaging the community and creating critical mass. No very surprised, but that's the easy answer.
Lunar mapping?
Yeah. We've got every road on the moon mapped out already.
I think like anybody else who's in a business that has been in business for, you know, for 25 years or whatever, and you sell a product which needs to stay at a high quality, you want to continue to innovate. And you want to continue to put your development resources into maintaining your quality while continuing to support new technologies as they become available, whether they be delivery platforms or whether they be different types of data. And there's so many great things out there that we want to add to the database. Prioritizing our efforts is obviously one of our challenges.
Have you paid for content for public art? For content that you'd love to have in, but you just don't have the time and the resources right now to source it? Is that something that would be viable? Or would it be something you wouldn't consider because it's not
given as fact, meaning it's effectively coming from the community?
No, I mean,
conceptually, is that something you'd be interested in pursuing?
We absolutely license content from other companies for different uses. In some cases, we are
public art is specifically a company which is just crowdsourcing this stuff.
So without being specific about, you know, buying from a particular company,
can we ask the next question, please?
Yes. Yes.
Who is the next question?
Yes, sir. I am AJ from Speak With Me. So
I can't.
AJ from Speak With
Me. No, I was trying to speak with you.
So this is a bit directed at Kelly Atlas, but a bit kind of also towards people who do crowdsourcing. So Diane, you're welcome to chime in as well. So who is going to make an ad network off of all this LBS stuff to kind of go toe to toe with Google? Or who, you know, so, a bit towards the Tele Atlas gentleman up there, are you going towards further and better monetization of all of your wonderful data, because Google's clearly going in that direction, and as we can tell, they're, you know, as you guys in particular can tell, they're not always so friendly to work with. So, you know, what's the strategy to compete against their humongous ad network?
Is it focused, the questions are on local search and monetizing map data.
Yes, monetizing local search. What are your plans for monetizing local search?
Well, let's take the question back a step. And in terms of competing with Google as an ad network themselves, that's not our thing. We're, you know, Google serves whatever the percentage is, 80% of the ads. They are that's their day job. That's why they have a $185 billion market cap, and they are, you know, they're really good at that. Now that said, I think that they use applications to learn more about their customers, to better profile them, to deliver a more effective ad to that guy the next time he does a local search or pulls up his email or whatever it is he does. So, you know, I don't think that's a secret to anybody in the room. So that said, I don't think it's a matter of,
I'm sorry, but it is a secret, or maybe it's not, that can be subsidized across lots of different applications, so they can afford to give this map away for free, which Teleatlas can't do.
Well, that's true to an extent. I mean, Google gives away access to their map through their APIs and through their applications, which is different than giving away the map.
But it means that developers might be interested in going to use a Google Map API and rolling your own.
Absolutely. For many people, that will be a thing. All I'm saying is there's a difference between sourcing a map and sourcing access to their map with their POIs with the other stuff. So to the slide that Christian put up right at the beginning, there's a whole bunch of stuff that when you get the free map from Google, you get a whole bunch of other stuff with it. So that said, I think that, you know, for anybody, obviously tons of companies compete with Google in one place or another. And there are lots of people who have lots of people who've got applications. You look at a NIM or a Teleapp. They have an app, they have a navigation application. Even putting aside the quality of our data versus Google's, they've got a navigation application that's better. Right? So there are lots of people who are looking. There are lots of people who are looking to use applications and other platforms to go and compete with Google. And so ours will be, you know, ours is a natural partnership with companies who are looking to use maps in a different way. That's a non Google way.
So let me just I'll quickly state the obvious. So I think it's a very pertinent question. You heard the Google guys stand up and say, forget all this navigation junk, it comes out to advertising, right? So whether we like it or not, they are going to level the playing field back to advertising. Now, that doesn't mean, as we all know, and we've all said, that no one's going to buy any more TomTom devices or Teleatlas maps, but the reality is there's a seismic shift going on, and they own the stack right down from, you know, they gave up on Google Base right quietly and rolled into Local Merchant Center, all the way through the stack, up to navigation, and they're going to monetize that with advertising and give everything away for free. So unless somebody competes with them, and in which case I'll just do an ad model and buy them, unless somebody competes with them in a meaningful way, and maybe it's Placecast or something like that, I do think the reality is that they will monetize through advertising and they will generate the reality for consumers that free is good enough, and I think there's going to be a seismic shift in this market. And we all kind of danced around it, but the Google guy sat here and said, it's advertising, we don't care about navigation.
Yeah, it's surprising he came out and said something like that. I'm glad.
So, you know, one of the things that's pretty clear is that you know, nobody in this room is going to beat Google in advertising, but that doesn't mean that Google will have 100% of advertising. I think it's pretty clear now that there are pretty good businesses out there that are in the same business of having an ad network as Google.
Examples.
Examples? Oh, I mean, Google has, you know, depending on what numbers you believe, somewhere between 40 and 60% of the online ad market. The rest is a $1 billion market.
Yeah, but if I'm running Yahoo, I'm telling my investors, since we're playing a $1 billion market, I'm off the stage.
It's like somebody saying, don't create mobile phones because Nokia is impossible to compete with. Well, you know, guess what? Apple just did it. Google is doing it.
Well, in North America, Nokia has marginal market share. And that's where iPhones were launched.
Well, they're doing pretty good outside of the U.S. too.
Yeah, but I mean, the point is sort of taken that way. People have argued, well, antitrust reasons, Google needs to be kind of stopped in its tracks right now. And, of course, the Google argument is, no, the search bar is only kind of one click away.
But it's more simple than that. It's basically whenever a company gets that big a market share, and whether that's Nokia in mobile phones or Google in advertising, it gets really, really hard to keep that market share. It's actually harder to keep it than it is for new people to come in and gain market share. That's the way, I mean, that's just normal business rules. So as if that's a small market, you know, $1 million market, then it's not interesting. But if it's a $1 billion market, then, to be quite honest, if we can build a $1 billion business, even a $500 million business, that's pretty cool.
How are you going to finance it? It's not going to be venture, guys, because it's not a big enough.
We are venture financed.
You tell them you're going to have a $1 billion business? Like,
absolutely.
All right, well, good for that. All
right. We have a couple more questions from the audience. I do apologize if I'm running over, but I think this is good, so I'm going to keep it going. If you have a flight to catch, feel free to leave. We have a question from Steve Coasting.
So hello, I'm Steve Coach from OpenStreetMap and CloudMate, so you might detect a small bias in my question. When you had the telly out of the slide up, had all these logos, and one of them was Google, right? And at some point, that's going to have to be taken off, right? You're still using Google. Google is still using telly out of the data in Europe, but that's going to go away in, 6 or 12 months or something, right? And then if several of those other people got their acts together, they could also make their own maps of either Europe or America, other places in the Northern Hemisphere. People like, if you think FedEx and UPS, it's not like they don't have any cars driving around, right? So what's the world going to look like when we have 3, 5, 10, 15 base maps of Europe and the US, and they're all of, roughly okay quality? What's going to happen to these massive valuations that we just saw to Navtech and Telly Atlas? And, what are people going to compete on, I think, in that time span?
This is an enormously valid question. Panelists care to entertain it.
Steve, you've got a passion for maps, for sure.
Succession, I think.
But the thing is, just because I can make a hamburger at home doesn't mean I'm not going to go to McDonald's every now and buy one. It's just not everybody's core thing that they want to spend their day on is going to be making maps. So I think that lots of other products that are ingredient things, maps are something that you're going to want a specialist to build because you want a certain level of quality and you want a certain guarantee that they're going to be updated every so often, and you want all of these other things. So, personally, there are lots of different ways, particularly as, there are lots of mobile people, lots of mobile devices, lots of fleets on the road. There are lots of ways that you could collect some of the information. Would you want to? Probably not. I mean, the prices, honestly, have not been a detriment to the progression of any sort of location-based business, either on the enterprise side or on the consumer side, really. I mean, the business has grown gangbusters at a sustained rate over the past, certainly from 1990, whatever, 5 on, it's been a compounded, whatever it is, 30% growth. I mean, it's a great business, and there are lots of other places to focus. You want to, if you're a new company, you want to focus on either delivering your core business product more effectively, or if you're looking to innovate, you want to focus on building something new and innovative and getting a new product to market to serve an emerging market demand.
I think it was Kierkegaard who said something about not knowing the unknowing or something, the unknown.
So I'll give you an example of what Steve mentions here. I bumped into somebody on one of these many conferences who told me that Verizon just bought their own map of California and Nevada, basically asked a consultancy to build them a map. Obviously, it's not for consumer use. It's something they use to optimize their business. But I still think it's down the same line. I think, it's clear that I'd certainly be worried if I was in a business that where the map data itself was considered the most valuable.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe if we kind of advance ahead, maybe 5 years would be extreme, what might it look like? I could imagine there'd be this kind of 5-15 maybe worldwide vendors, different kinds of base maps, a lot of this free stuff.
For the record, by the way, there are, Freddie ran the number, I think there's 210 or something different map vendors around the world. I mean,
Sure. I mean,
the same job it is.
Right. I mean, like, the kid in the garage can be a map vendor of very specialized attributes and geographic
geography or whatever. But
when it
comes to building a business and wanting to have interoperability,
there's a small handful.
And there's certainly a tremendous utility.
And if their customer base goes down because organizations are interested in what maybe the FedEx offer might be, because they might decide to kind of open up what they've created because they don't mind, it's just serving, it's not a strategic imperative for them, it's just a way to kind of minimize cost basis. That might mean that if there are fewer customers for commercial providers, the price actually goes up, which might provide kind of really perverse incentives in terms of how things are maintained and what the value is that might be perceived out of it. Duncan, you have a comment on this?
Well, if OpenStreetMap's successful, right, why would they need to go ahead and build these, you know, 33 maps? I mean, I won't take any more time on it. The reality is with us that as long as there's a base map, you know, we see value in going deep into POIs. So that's my get out.
Congratulations to the Oregon Survey for paying lip service to open data. I think maybe they'll kind of get there, though. Nobody knows what I'm talking about.
I do.
Yeah. So just kind of point of distinction, in the United States, map data, at least through census, Tiger data, that the government collects every 10 years, roughly, is made available. It's open. It's free. You can do what you want with it. In the UK, countries in Europe, and other parts of the world, it is much more restricted. In the case of England, the Ordnance Survey treats this thing as a crown jewel. Actually, it is a crown copyright. It's owned by the government. Prices are through the roof. It doesn't matter what you want to do with it. Until we had the commercial base map providers and OpenStreetMap, you had to go to the Ordnance Survey, and they'd kind of, inflict some damage on you financially, no matter who you are. So they just started to move things ever so slightly, I think, just to recognize that they're part of Web 2.0 or they're part of this economy today. But practically speaking, there's been no change. And the reason is that it's a lot of money. It's going to the corporate, the treasury, and that's companies like that. They don't want to lose it. Okay, we have more questions.
We have a couple
Diane.
Okay. Diane from Waze. So this has been a phenomenal panel, but I do feel that even with more flair that I'm getting the same answers to the questions that have been asked over and over again. So let's play a game. So the game is TeleAtlas. Let's just assume that base maps are commodified. Not navigable data, not real-time data. Let's just assume there are plenty of great maps. Just for thought's sake, because you won't say that there's, fine, the better maps, fine. And then for you guys, for the newer entrants, so exciting what you're doing, but still the business models are incredibly far off. In terms of scale, I mean, just to reference PlaceShop, I mean, we have millions of users every month and 400 million geolocated.
How many monthly uniques, like at the peak, roughly?
At the peak, around 25 million, and we weren't able to monetize in a way that was substantial. Now, all of the technologies and all of the data are moving in the direction where that will be proven out, but it could still be a long time. So the game is, let's assume that advertising is going to be what makes all of you guys profitable. And I would like to see if the three of you guys would have a brainstorm right now to let go of your ideas about what you have to say for your investors, for your company. What is it a relationship with you guys look like in 1 year? Just pretend that you guys are all the leaders in POI and free maps and applications and in the top client map. Make a partnership right now, 1 minute. Where is the money coming from? Who's getting the money? Who's paying? Can we do that?
Yeah, I can help them wrong.
All right.
So, who has the greatest customer base out of the three of you? Who's kind of the sales channel? Okay, TeleAtlas.
Right.
So, what do we all do? What do you bring to the table?
It's basically all about developers. We're going to make sure the developers.
Okay, Duncan, tell me something I can use.
We're going to empower the community to create really bad.
I think that's what it's all about. We will be.
Well, it looks like it's all about user experience. I don't know.
We're going to be hiring more iPhone developers. For just to take an example, than anybody else here in a year's time.
Excellent. And how many of these developers will be paying for that?
I'm sure you know the long tail model. It's not a matter of quantity. It's a matter of making sure that the high end of the long tail pays, and the long tail is advertising.
So let's pretend you're not going to be in charge of monetization. You have to do monetization too. How are you going to change the model so that you get the better data from these guys that's improving what you've got so that you can have a scalable enough audience using their information that they make money and everybody gets good maps?
Okay. So I would answer that in three ways. The first one is we've, understandably, demonized Google a bit as the folks, as everybody in the room.
I'm going to go back to my first slide.
As everyone in the room has, to an extent. And they are absolutely, cannibalizing is the right word, because they're going in there, putting a wrecking ball through a lot of people's business models. That said, there is at least one really good thing that's going to come out of this. Google makes their money on advertising. Google is making a huge play in mobile, therefore mobile advertising is going to, the maturity of it is going to accelerate. They're going to put rate cards in the market, they're going to draw more money into it because they're drawing more eyeballs into it. operating systems that deliver robust capabilities plus great applications with questionable data. You know, get people using a product and create a market demand for advertising. In the short term, that takes time. 2 years from now, a reasonable portion of the billions and billions that get spent worldwide on different media, newspaper, television, whatever, goes into location-based advertising on a mobile device. And that money can then be used, so if you ask for the sales channel, that money can then be used, if we're talking specifically about free to consumer, reduced price to consumer applications, you can then monetize free or cheap to consumer applications through location-based advertising once that flow is there. So in the future, that is a realistic place to go. A second one is premium content. So there are lots of different examples, whether it's a city guide, whether it's a walking tour, whether it's a song about the place you're walking through, whatever it is. There are lots of great pieces of content that are out there. And one thing that Apple has done for us,
and it's something that in this scenario,
it's something that you might.
Let me take a quick stab at this question. So here would be my off the cuff response, which is, I truly believe that, like I said earlier, Google's got this whole stack, and they've got it right down from Merchant Central all the way up. You know, Google Place pages, they're threatening everybody. So the inevitable move, you know, just to continue to demonize them, the inevitable move they've got, just like Microsoft is, they are, you know, sucking the air out of the ecosystem. I'll tell you what, the likes of, you know, Verizon and Apple, as we know, they don't want to continue to work with them. So this advertising model around local merchants, I truly believe there needs to be an alternative. So your average, you know, mom and shop, mom and pop laundry, or not everyone's going to go to Google. So if somebody, because Verizon won't work with them, a whole slew of others, if somebody can create an alternative to a merchant center that plays pages all the way up the stack, which, you know, we could potentially cobble together, then you will be able to align yourselves with, you know, I don't know if it's the Nokias or everybody else out there who is also aligned against Google. And I believe that has to be the way to compete with them, is, you know, the entire world is going to align against them. You've got to align with the rest of that world. And all the pieces are in this room. It can happen.
That's exactly what I think, too. The alliances have to get better. But in order for something meaningful to happen, everybody has to step out of their party line. I mean, would you give them free maps so he can have his developers use your maps that he can bring to you with his content so that it's premium and you share in the risk for this future model?
I'll give you an example of that. So we've just launched an alpha version of what we call Data Marketplace. And that is exactly because we're willing to partner with anyone who has data that is valuable for our developers. What we want to do is still make it really easy for them to use, because there's lots of data available out there that no developers are using in their apps because it's just too complex.
We're working to put our POIs in there, so they are a distribution platform for our POIs, and, you know, in return, we're going to use their maps. So.
Yeah. But the fear is, for the newer entrants, you know, how many years will it take for you guys to pull it off, and will the VCs continue to fund it? And so, TeleAtlas, I mean, I would like to hear some of the leaders in this industry, the incumbents, say, yes, we're taking a bold move. We are going to have this data set that's going to be available for rev share to these partners, and we're going to pull it off. Or don't even do that, but say, here's our ad channel, and, you know, here we're going to monetize it through having the most information about place that exists. Or what? But what's the bold move? And so,
The reality is, you know, I hate to give, you know, the most obvious cliche analogy, but, you know, look back at Microsoft and what they did to, you know, did people align well against them? It took a long time for that to happen. I think it is a very relevant question. I think, you know, I believe that there needs to be an alliance pulled together. And if you have a meaningful alternative, I think it will be extremely successful. But it's one of the key challenges, no doubt.
It is also a matter of not making sure you're not basically trying to battle alone, right? I mean, we're not trying to go out and get lots of consumers to pay us something. We launched to developers about half a year ago, and since then we've gotten over 7,000 developers to sign up on our platform. You know, that's the people that will
make
us a
good
business.
Into a near-term model that's
going to
push this industry forward?
I think I actually disagree with you. It actually means without the App Store or the Android Marketplace, no. But they just happen to be there, and you know, so the timing is quite right for that. I think we are seeing a complete change of how mobile apps, especially, are both being used and monetized.
I agree with that too. I think that there are lots of, already today there are You know, not that everybody's going to successfully replicate the App Store, although there are several, obviously, who are trying. But, I mean, if nothing else, that model has demonstrated that where we used to have this perception that consumers would never, ever be willing to make micropayments for small functionality, small pieces of functionality or small pieces of content, we now know that's not true. I mean,
absolutely.
People will pull out their wallet and pay 99 cents or a few bucks. You know, in the case of a TomTom application, 99 bucks. I mean, people are buying bite-sized or gigantic bite-sized things and putting them on their devices. And that's actually good for us, too. I mean, that is indicative of a new model for us as well. So
you're saying you're sharing your revenue, so you're getting some sort of a transaction or revenue share for each of those.
Well, I would say that there are lots of...
Because otherwise, how can you capture that?
Well, I would say this. There are lots of people in this room who are under NDA and shouldn't be specific about it, who we have risk-reward relationships with. It's not unusual at all for us to partner with companies to, you know, share when they're successful and take risks when they're at risk. And so that's not a model that was caused by Google. That's a model that we put in place years ago to help foster innovation.
And yes, we have revenue share deals with developers as well. Okay.
We have time for one more brief question.
I'm going to make one comment first.
Please do, but I'm just apologizing, but this is
so Duncan's comment about the alliance kind of bending together, which will have sense in local search, that I've been banging my head against the wall for the last 4 years going to these local search conferences. And the thing that happens every conference is next year, the year of local search. It's really effing hard to bring all these pieces together. The 15 million small businesses in the U.S. alone, half of them don't even have a fax machine. The other half don't know how to use it. They might be immigrants. They don't speak English. They don't have technology. They don't know what AdWords means. They have too many sales reps coming into them. So absolutely, the bounty is there, but it's hard to take it.
It's hard. It's surprising there's no Yellow Page companies here.
No, it's not surprising.
Well,
at all.
It's saddening, I say.
I don't know if there's anybody. Look, they're living on the cash cow, and they're in absolute denial. Frankly, well, okay, I wasn't here yesterday, so I can't comment on the automotive side.
No, but to your point, they are selling to the people you just mentioned, the ones who don't know AdWords. They are buying a Yellow Page.
Oh, they have.
Yeah, absolutely.
They should be part of that stack.
Yeah, but they're entirely conflicted. They have channel conflict, right? The sales rep wants to sell a half page ad for $500 a quarter, not $30 a month.
I think they cut your mic, by the way.
Just don't touch the mic. just ask.
You have a floor.
No, it's yours.
Oh, please, I insist.
No.
I thought we had another question.
Well, you guys
we have
fight
one
about
it.
Jim.
To your point, I've spent the last God knows how many years beating my head against the Yellow Page wall as well, because you hit the nail on the head. The most difficult thing is to aggregate the merchants, is to have those feet on the street, you know, and those Yellow Page guys, they've got that infrastructure. And when you have that meeting with them, they nod their head a lot, and then they fall back asleep. And it's really interesting. They are living in denial. I mean, billions of dollars of free cash flow have been tossed off by these guys, and they just can't believe it, that the world has changed. Anyway, my question goes to the OSM, the development of OSM, and what that means to our industry. I personally believe it's more of a paradigm shifting thing than even this Google advertising application with navigation. And so in light of what is now known and what we now see with the OpenStreetMap and what just a little bit of distribution can do for the quality of that map and how rapidly it can be built out, in light of knowing this now, I wonder if you guys would talk a little bit about TomTom's decision to acquire Teleatlas and Nokia's decision to acquire Navtech, and would those decisions have been made at the same valuations today, and what that impact is going to be long term. Did I say that in a diplomatic enough way?
I'm sure the responses will be in a similar way.
I'm not answering that. Are you crazy?
Fair enough. So I think it's easy to answer the last part of the question, because we've had a recession, ever since that, more or less. So the evaluation would definitely not be the same. Whether the evaluation would be influenced negatively because of OpenStreetMap, I think is a harder thing to answer, because I think a lot of people react the same way to OpenStreetMap as you were just saying that Yellow Page companies react to how the industry is changing. A lot of people think that it's a map that's trying to become as good as Snaptech and Tela is, and it's not. It's a geo database that will has already exceeded those two map databases in Germany, and will do so in the rest of the world to the point where it doesn't really look like the same thing anymore.
So are you saying that OpenStreetMap data will be better than Tela House or Snaptech data at some point in the future?
Well, it depends on what you're using it for. If we're talking about using it for optimizing truck routes, probably not.
For routing, will it be better?
But will
for regular, in a PND, will OpenStreetMap grade data be on par or better?
Will it be better for finding
for driving
anything you're interested in?
For driving,
yes,
driving.
It's not something you can separate like that, right? Because
said it was going to be better. So I don't know how it's going
to
be.
If I take a PND, right?
No, but you said
let's take a great PND, a TomTom, pretty good PND, right? It can do pretty damn good navigation, but if it doesn't know the place I'm going to, then how does it matter that it does good navigation?
Yeah, I'm talking about if the
data, I think the overall experience
attribute is not, you can't navigate with it.
Sorry?
If you don't have certain addressing components and elements in the base data, you have a problem navigating.
Yeah, so we'll definitely, that's definitely achievable. But does that mean that, there isn't going to be some places where Tela's map or Snaptech map does even better navigation? I'm sure there probably will be. But compare that to a data set that has an order of magnitude more POIs, that has complete up-to-date POIs from people on the ground that live near that POI, it's just, you can't, it's like apples and oranges. And I think that's the key here, that OpenStreetMap isn't trying to build what Tela Atlas and Snaptech has already built. That's a step on the road, but that's not the end goal.
Okay.
The end goal is something
I misunderstood.
A lot bigger than comment.
I'm just waiting for you to wrap this up with some wonderful insight. Everyone's going to go, don't forget that bit, right?
Yes, we should probably wrap up.
Yeah,
first
thing.
I'd love to go on for another hour.
Darren.
I'll get you out of trouble if I do.
Darren, do you have any concluding remarks in 20 seconds or less?
20 seconds or less. I think that what's great about a dialogue like this is that it
just don't use the word innovation.
I will try to steer clear of that. What's great about the conversation like this is that everybody is thinking about new business models, and everybody's thinking about different ways to monetize new products. Absolutely. How are you going to do that? I mean, I think
not just that you're going to do that. How are you going to help you do that?
It's 20 seconds. It's not. Anyway, I'd like to thank all the panelists enormously for their generosity and their spirit and the thick skin that they put on, and hopefully we'll still be friends after the panel. Duncan, Christian, and Darren.
We have to come together and include
the plenary session.